This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In a recent series of the comic strip Doonesbury, rock and roll star Jimmy Thudpucker signs a contract with Burger King's record label and brags that his music is going to be played in every franchise around the country. In fact, he says his demographic is in the ladies' room. The spoof was clearly aimed at Paul McCartney and that coffee shop on every corner.
I've got too much on my plate. Don't have no time to be a decent lover. I hope it isn't too late. Searching for the time that has gone so fast.
That's an excerpt from Memory Almost Full, McCartney's new album on Starbucks record label, Hear Music. And the idea that one of the most popular recording artists in the world hopes that you'll buy his new CD along with your skinny latte suggests that the music business is changing and fast. Traditional record companies aren't exactly going out of business, but a lot of record stores are closing down. Radio and MTV are still important, but these days, so are video games and TV ads, and as we'll hear, some indie bands are looking for corporate sponsors. So what unusual places are you finding music in these days? And if you're a musician, what are some of the more unconventional techniques you're using to get your music out? Our number, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later on in the program, interested individuals and activist groups now have access to what was once a superpower duopoly, Google Earth and the democratization of spy satellites. But first, new ways to market music. We begin with Cora Daniels, who wrote an article called The New Music Moguls in Fast Company magazine. She's also the author of the book Ghetto Nation, and she joins us from our studios in New York. Nice to have you back on the program.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And how are you? In this series of interviews, I was fascinated by the number of ways that new companies are using music to promote themselves and vice versa. Hallmark Cards, for instance, you don't think of them as a major music producer.
Right, but they're producing platinum-selling albums, which is really amazing because you don't think of Hallmark Cards that way. But their albums are actually doing you know, the best of the companies that we profiled, and they take it seriously. They have a team that is just devoted to music.
A team that's just, and when they decide, it was interesting, the interview with the woman from Hallmark said, you know, they spend a lot of time figuring out which artists to use, which artists to record, but once they do, they let the artists have control over what they do.
Exactly. I mean, what Hallmark does, because they are a card company, they tie it to holidays. So they put out a Christmas album and they put out a Valentine's Day album. And they poll their customers. They give them choices of different artists and really ask them very specific questions. Would you rather listen to this artist at Christmas time? Would you rather listen to it at Valentine's Day? But once they decide which artist they're going to go for what holiday, they give the artist free rein. They're not having trouble getting artists to sign on because they do have complete creative free reign. It's just a matter of when the album is released.
Yeah, and the one qualm that you said the artists have is doing stuff that far in advance. They're not quite used
exactly,
to that.
Exactly, because they work at least 18 months in advance, which is not typical turnaround for the music industry. So that's usually the stumbling block for artists. You want me to do something when?
When, yeah. And also, and I guess we're all accustomed by now to the idea that Starbucks is selling records in the stores, but the Scion Car Company, a division of Toyota.
Exactly. I actually, just a couple weekends ago, I found myself at a, inadvertently, I found myself at a Scion event. I went to a local music gathering in my hometown of Brooklyn, and there was a big Scion display, and it was promoting some of the artists, and they make vinyl records to give out to DJs, promoting local hip-hop bands. Mm-hmm. And they give the artists the masters. They print up about 1,000 copies. They distribute it through the club network and the club scene. And it can be a real break for artists that don't have a traditional record deal because they are now being heard in the clubs. And that's traditionally where bands can break in the clubs.
What is in it for Hallmark and for Scion Cars?
Well, there's the for Scion, there's the cool factor that they can definitely be seen as the cutting edge because they're trying to market their cars to a younger audience. For Hallmark, they're making a truckload of money. The albums are tied to their merchandise, so you can get the album for a cheaper price if you buy three cards. And when you present it that way to consumers, consumers want a deal, so they end up buying three cards. They can get an album for $5. And so they make a lot of money.
We're talking with Cora Daniels, a writer, about new ways of marketing music. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. And let's talk with Francisco. Francisco's calling us from Reno Valley in California.
Hey, how's it going?
All right.
Well, what I wanted to say was that I have seen a lot of these commercial albums in stores, such as Starbucks, and I even saw one for Bob Dylan in Victoria's Secret, which was kind of scary. But the way I get my music, I'm 18 years old and I'm a musician, and so music is pretty big, is that I get it through my friends who will send me files or burn me CDs. Also, there are a number of websites online that are just geared towards discovering new music. For example, there's a website called Pandora, that will, if you enter an artist that you enjoy, it will give you a list of recommendations for other artists. And I believe there's another one called the Music Genome Project, which is pretty interesting. Also, commercials, to really get close to the topic that you're talking about, play a big part, I think. Especially a few years ago, there was a Volkswagen commercial for an artist named Nick Drake, who up until that point had only received moderately successful sales, but once his song Pink Moon appeared in the Volkswagen commercial, there was a massive resurgence for Nick Drake Records. And so I think commercials really will play a big part.
Cora Daniels, commercials?
Yeah, no, he's definitely the caller is definitely right. I mean, one of the folks that I talked to was a vice president at Gray Worldwide, and they have artists pitching them all the time. They have actually concerts in their offices of artists pitching them their albums before they come out because they want to get their songs linked to commercials. And we had a really interesting discussion because he's also found that folks are crossing the line. So you have songwriters who used to just write jingles who are crossing over to the music industry, folks who've been at record labels for a long time who are moving over to ad agencies. And there's really been this cross-pollinization. So, I mean, his dream is to have a hit song, to make a hit song in a commercial.
And I was fascinated in that part of your article to see that, in fact, one of the arguments for this is there's nowhere else anymore where you can get that heavy rotation that you can when a song is part of a television commercial.
Exactly. MTV and the video channels, they're playing a lot of shows now. They're not actually playing videos, and it is the advertisers. It is retailers who have that kind of money to buy airplay, and this is what we're thinking of as airplay. So that Volkswagen commercial is going to play a lot more times than the traditional video on MTV.
Francisco, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Oh, I forgot one before you go, Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Did you buy the Bob Dylan album at Victoria's Secret?
No, I unfortunately I didn't. I don't really equate Bob Dylan as being all that sexy. Although he's one of my favorite artists.
Well, I'm sure some people would beg to differ. But anyway, thanks very much for the call. Perhaps people at Victoria's Secret. Joining us now is Steve Schnur, who's one of the new moguls that's profiled in the Fast Company article. He's worldwide executive of music and marketing for Electronic Arts Video Games. He joins us from NPR West in Culver City, California. Nice to have you on the program today.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
Well, thanks. Now, your job is to create the soundtrack for EA Video Games. And, you know, I guess fogies like me keep thinking it's going to be, some pulse track. In fact, for many years now, music has been a big part of this.
Well, you're correct, and I don't mean to infer that you are a fogey.
Oh, you don't need to infer.
Okay, good. And by the way, hi, Cora, how are you?
Hi, how are you doing?
You know, about 6-7-plus years ago, you are correct, Neil, the average video game sounded like what I like to refer to as good humor truck music,
yeah,
music done on Casios predominantly by employees. And one of the things when I got first hired at EA, one of the first things that the then president of the company said to me is, you'll know you'll have succeeded here if every internal audio guy hates your guts, because basically it was going to be my job to stop them from making music. And what we did was we started utilizing the real estate in video games to do what MTV and radio had done for all of us in older generations for decades before. You know, I'm listening to you guys talking, and I think that it's a very simple equation. The bottom line is you bring music to where people are versus where they're not. We were all brought up in a radio-driven society. Mm-hmm. You listen to, I was brought up outside of New York, so I would listen to the rock radio stations there, and that's where I first heard about the Police. That's where I first heard about whatever, U2. Then came the MTV generation, and it was obviously very, very visually oriented, and a whole new generation was brought up expecting a visual attachment, and thus came the Duran Durans and eventually the Nirvanas. Now the bottom line is anybody between the ages of 12 to 24, pretty much on an international basis, spends the predominant amount of their time either online or playing games. They're not listening to the radio. They're not watching MTV. And like Cora mentioned, you know, through consolidation of radio, which means a much more limited playlist, and through the understandably so programming that MTV and others have to adhere to now, programming of shows versus music, video games are a natural place to go, considering that the love and discovery of music is the one consistent that has not changed. Every young person wants to discover their new favorite band, something that they can call their own, something that makes their parents say, turn that down.
I mean, I think that's what our caller, our 18-year-old caller, we got distracted of the thought of Bob Dylan at Victoria's Secret, but what he did say was that he had fell in love with a song through a video game.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that's where he had heard his music.
And it could have been the Good Humor music. I would have told my kids to turn that down too. But anyway, we're gonna duck away for just a minute. We're talking with Steve Schnurr of EA Video Games and with writer Cora Daniels. If you'd like to join our conversation about where you find that new music, give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The music we listened to used to depend on what MTV or our favorite radio station put in their rotation, or which bands were picked up by major record labels. These days, CD sales are down, downloads are growing, even the paid ones, and you're just as likely to find the latest hot single in a car ad or a new video game. Today we're talking about and with some of the new music moguls. Our guests are Cora Daniels. She wrote the series on the new music moguls for Fast Company magazine. You can read it through a link at our website, npr.org/talk. And Steve Schnurr is also with us. He's head of music and marketing for Electronic Arts Video Games. And we're going to hear from one of the indie acts that he signed in a few minutes. If you're finding new music in interesting places, let us know. If you're a musician, what are some of the more unconventional techniques you're using to get your music out? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org, and let us know who you'd include on the list of new music moguls on our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. And Steve Schnurr, when you look for these acts, how do you find them?
Well, the first year, about 6 years ago, we had to spend most of our time out there scouring the world, so to speak, musically speaking, and explain to folks at record companies and publishing companies why it was important. Fortunately, the people we didn't have to ever explain it to were the bands and artists themselves, because they spend most of their time either in a green room or on the road or in the studio, mm-hmm. and they're not recording, playing video games. So I found that over the last 5 years in particular, we get bombarded, for lack of a better term, with thousands and thousands and thousands of submissions from around the world, artists that want to be in games because they themselves have played one of our games and have discovered other bands. So I think, again, artists themselves have been the ones who got it from the very beginning. And what the tangible evidence of how it works is that they are also on the front lines every night in a club somewhere. And there would be kids, and I've heard this from bands as small as an indie band from Sweden, hypothetically, to as big as Green Day, where they've come up to me after and said, man, there's kids every single night at a gig saying, first time I heard this song, or the first time I heard you, or I got turned on to you through Madden or Need for Speed or whatever the case may be. So we just have to be ahead of the curve, because just like Cora mentioned with the folks at Hallmark, I'm programming music for instance, Madden Football in January for a game that comes out in August, and I want that to be the first time somebody hears and gets turned on to a new artist. So what ends up happening is we end up going in the studio with a lot of bands as they're recording to sort of figure out along the way which of the maybe 3,000 or 4,000 submitted artists we'll narrow down to the 30 that make it in the game.
3,000 or 4,000 submitted artists.
For Madden NFL football and for FIFA and the biggies, about 3,000 or 4,000, yeah. Mm.
One of the artists who's had this experience is Johnny Dubowski. He's the lead singer of the indie band Johnny Lives and founder of Rock and Renew, a nonprofit group that promotes awareness of sustainability. He's with us now from the studios of the BBC Western House in London. Nice to have you on the program today.
Nice to be here. Thanks for having me on. How's it going, guys?
Good. The song Get Steady from your first album was selected for an Electronic Arts video game. Here's a clip. Let's listen. Now, Johnny, what video game was that from?
MVP Baseball 2004, and thank you, Steve, by the way.
No, thank you. You're the creator. I just can provide the real estate. You're the guy that came up with the tune.
Hmm. But after you did that, as I understand it, you would play that song at concerts, and people would say, oh, yeah, I know that from the video game.
As recently as last week, actually, the new assistant I just hired for Rock and Renew came up to me when we first met and said, I must have listened to that song easily 4,000 or 5,000 times, because they play the video games, you know, countless hour upon hour, and it's such a great soundtrack of different songs that is on all of those games. So it's great exposure, and it's really a captive audience when that kid is coming home after school and playing the game for 4 hours in a row.
Hmm. Now, did you send a tape to EA, or did they contact you?
You know, I'm not really sure. I think that our manager at the time sent a CD. I think it was our manager, Jamie Schoenfeld, who sent a CD. Is he a friend of yours, Steve?
I've known him since I lived in New York, yeah, for,
wow,
God, 15, 20 years.
Yeah, and I just remember getting the call, and I still have the voicemail saved in my phone. And it was really, you know, it's hard to pinpoint, you know, the big break, but certainly that's the one that time and time again, it made so many impressions on young people, and it really, before there was even a MySpace, it created an exchange between us and our fans. Mm. And it really, we have a history with our fans, because now the kids who grew up playing that game are in their 20s, and they are the kids who come and see us play when we're on tour. And, you know, that video game was the reason that paid for us to come to England. And then, oh, and it is a typo in the article. We didn't get $30,000. I'm sure my band saw that. They were like, you've been holding out on us.
Well, how much was it?
I think it was a couple of thousand. It was
I think there was one zero too many, Johnny.
Yeah. But still, you know, that being said, as a bartender who was self-funding really everything that we did, that paid for us to come to England for the first time, where I sit today for my probably 20th time, and I'm about to go to Madrid on Friday with the Kaiser Chiefs. I'm doing a show with Sean Lennon in Belgium on Saturday, and all of these things I still continue to fund through corporate sponsorships and these relationships.
Hmm. You've been working, as I understand it, from the article, from Cora Daniels' article, with Nokia, the cell phone company.
Yeah, they were really on the cutting edge of the video aspect of the phone. They had this Carl Zeiss optics, which if you're, you know, I'm kind of a tech nerd myself. And the camera phone on this one particular phone was remarkable. And so we used it to shoot a music video. And, you know, the way that these companies really get it when they start working with an indie band is to not try and hit the audience over the head with the marketing and integrating their product into the campaign, because that doesn't ever really work. So we just, you know, it was an accoutrement to the treatment of the video, but it actually wound up making for a really good video, integrating that into it,
and got us an
additional great amount of exposure.
Yeah, Coral Daniels, I guess the secret, like you were talking about the car company, be subtle, don't hit people over the head with a 2x4, and just benefit from the cool factor.
Right, exactly. I mean, I think Steve and I had talked a little bit about this, too. It used to be bands would remember the first time that they would hear their song on the radio, and now it's when they hear their song in a video game.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Michael. Michael's with us from Savannah, Georgia.
Hey, how are you doing?
Very well.
I just wondered, I haven't played video games for probably 30 years, but when do 35 songs play during, like, a John Madden football video game?
Steve Schneider?
I think that differs game by game. I mean, sports games in particular, you know, they come up in menus when you're setting up your team, you're setting up your players, whatever the case may be. And people spend an amazing amount of time setting these things up, down to the color of the uniforms in the stadiums. Certain games, racing games like Need for Speed or others, they play consistently through the entire gameplay experience. The interesting point, and I remember before we spoke about the amount of impressions that a television commercial can have, well, if you figure out the amount of hours that the average young person, let's call the young person 12 to 24 in this case, spends playing video games, each person ends up playing a video game on average about 80, 90, sometimes 100 plus hours each. You got to remember that video games are a social experience. It's not played by one person. It's usually played by 2 to 3 people. And music rotates to come up about 2 to 3 times an hour, the average song. So if you do the math and you figure out you sell about 7, 8, 9, 10 million units of a game, which isn't unheard of when it comes to the games we're talking about, you could get about 1 billion-plus impressions of a song, one particular song, which is more than the number one record in every country around the world.
Wow. Michael, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Here's an email we got from Mike in Portland, Oregon. There is an underground group of bands who actually play the old video game music, what Steve calls the good humor music, in engaging progressive ways. The Advantage and the Mini Bosses in particular cover old Nintendo Entertainment System songs with traditional rock instruments and way more than the Madden football soundtrack, for example. So,
there's a nostalgia in everything, and people like to hear that sometimes. But then, you know, some people listen to oldies radio and like to listen to, you know, the big bopper, whatever.
Let's talk with Jeremy, and Jeremy's calling us from Tajikistan.
Wow.
Jeremy, you're there.
Hi. I travel a lot. I'm a PhD student, and I spend a lot of my time overseas, so a lot of my music I find out from online. I listen to BBC 6 radio online, and I read pitchforkmusic.com, which has a lot of indie reviews, and they talk about different videos and records that come out and review shows. So that's where I get a lot of my stuff. Also, when I travel, I read international periodicals and try to find new music that way.
Yeah. It strikes me, Jeremy, you must have a very powerful radio receiver there in Tajikistan. How are you listening to us?
Actually, through my satellite TV somehow. There's no picture, but I'm just listening through the television.
Cool.
Very cool.
Jeremy, thanks very much for the call. Have a good time. What are you doing in Tajikistan, by the way?
I'm working on Tajik and Persian language. I'm here with a program it's funded by the U.S. government, and it's a scholarship program for PhD students studying Persian.
Well, good luck to you. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Jeremy with us from Tajikistan. Here's another email. This I get from Michael. I get my new music from a rather unexpected source, anime music videos. There's a large following online of people who place clips from their favorite anime with their favorite music and provide a large variety of music. I often find new songs that I like when watching these videos. So I guess in a way these are doing, is this the equivalent of a video mashup, Steve?
It's a very cool concept. I mean, you know, it's a user-generated world, so It's a fantastic opportunity for creative people out there. Yeah, I would say it is a user mashup. That's a great way to put it.
Now let's get Mike on the line. Mike's calling us from Seattle.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the line. Go ahead.
Thank you. I just moved to Seattle from South Lake Tahoe, California, where there's a lot of sports there, and typically I would get my music from skateboard videos, like the old A-Treat videos, BC videos, and you kind of emulate the skateboarders you're watching on television or on the VHS, and their video parts would be the music that they're listening to, and in turn, it would turn you on to music, or you would want to listen to what they're listening to prior to doing what you do. But that's mainly how I got my music. I want to know what role that plays as far as getting bands out and stuff like that.
Steve, can you help us there?
It plays an enormous role, and ironically to that, Tony Hawk has been, the game itself has been probably one of the original games that started to play a significant role in launching new bands and discovery of new bands. We just worked on a game that comes out in about a minute called Skate, and the entire musical selection was based on skaters, real skaters, their selections, and it's all based on these original skate videos, the concept of that. I think it's a terrific way to get underground bands on a credible level to be heard.
It's also really cool when you're linking the music to some type of action, and the kids are spending so much time playing the video game, and then they're going outside and emulating the action as well, and you know, putting that into their lives. You know, putting on that song in the boombox that they saw on the Tony Hawk game, they'll go out in the ramp and try that trick 100 times with the song playing as kind of an inspiration to get through the bumps and bruises, I think.
You know, it's an interesting thing that a long time ago I had wished that let's use football as an example, when the obvious idea for music in Madden or a football game or a sports game would have been Gary Glitter and Queen, We Are the Champions, and AC/DC.
Right.
And I made a very, I guess, bold statement about 5-6 years ago that wouldn't it be cool if someday the live experience would sound like the virtual experience versus the opposite way. And I think we've definitely come to that. We've seen that happen now because all the NFL stadiums, for instance, all the music that's in Madden football gets played in all the stadiums. Same thing happens with the NBA, NASCAR, and so on. So in order to find a younger audience, a lot of the professional sports organizations are looking to video games as a place to where they can sort of emulate the sound.
Steve Schnurr is with Electronic Arts Video Games. Also with us, you heard it just a moment ago, Johnny Dubowski, the lead singer of the indie band Johnny Lives. And also with us, writer Cora Daniels, who wrote the Fast Company magazine article, The New Music Moguls. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get Jess on the line. Jess is with us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah, we're always talking about how the internet and video games and so on are changing the music scene, kind of taking away the focus on the radio. But I got kind of an interesting story about it. There's an independent musician in the States here that I work for that got a call from a radio station that heard his stuff on MySpace, and the radio station's in the UK, and they're starting a station that's going to run an evening show that's just going to play MySpace music. So they're actually rounding up musicians from MySpace and then putting on that as new MySpace music on this radio program.
Wow, talk about reversal of fortunes.
Yeah, you know, so I guess the radio's not totally dead yet as far as breaking music.
Yeah. Jess, thanks very much for that.
Yeah, no problem.
Johnny Dubowski, I wanted to ask you, you're obviously business-oriented, yet you're also an indie artist. How do you reconcile the business side with the artistic side of the music?
Well, you know, for me, I always stayed clear of the major labels. I played guitar in a few major label bands when I was in college at NYU, and just saw the short lifespan that the artist has really after the record comes out. Once the quarterly report factor starts getting into in any art, it really is a dangerous territory for an artist to be creating within. And, you know, I see working with corporate sponsors and working on licensing and placing music, that really, you know, we're not talking about making jingles. They're taking a song that I've already written and then they're just really helping to launch it in a greater respect. And for me, that's been the bread and butter of how our band gets to and fro. I mean, more recently, we've chosen only to work with companies who are dedicated to sustainability, just because I feel like the younger kids are ready for a little bit more substance in their music. And, you know, I see, we're talking about MySpace, I really see the music industry going back to like the singles era of the 50s, where you have an EA Sports game that's got 30 great songs on it, and that's the compilation like the old record labels used to put out.
Johnny Dubowski, I'm afraid we're out of time, but thanks very much. Good luck with your concerts.
Thank you.
Johnny Dubowski, of Johnny Lives and founder of the nonprofit Rock and Renew, with us from the BBC in London. Thanks to Steve Schnur and Cora Daniels as well. Thank you for your time. When we come back, we're going to talk about what you can see from space.